Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Pact Group's 2016 half-year results briefing. I'm Malcolm Bundey, Managing Director and CEO at Pact. I'm joined here today by Richard Betts, our Chief Financial Officer. Today, I'll provide you a brief overview of the key highlights for the period before handing to Richard to talk through the financials in more detail. I'll then return to talk to you about some initial observations and opportunities and our near-term outlook. We'll be pleased to take questions at the close of the presentation. If you wish to ask a question during the live Q&A session, please press star, then one on your telephone keypad in order to enter the queue. For those of you on the webcast, press the question box on the lower third of your screen. As we turn to the business highlights on slide four, I'm pleased to present here today, having joined the company only 2.5 months ago. I've been given a wonderful opportunity to oversee the management of this company, and I'd like to sincerely thank Brian Cridland, Pact CEO for the last 14 years, for his outstanding contribution to making Pact the company it is today, and also assisting greatly in the CEO transition process. Thank you, Brian. For the half, we've delivered growth in all key financial metrics: sales, EBIT, NPAT, operating cash flow, and dividends. Sales are up 8%, net profit after tax before significant items is up 10%, operating cash flow is up 7%, our gearing has reduced from 3.1 to 2.7, and dividends increased by more than 5%. These results are very pleasing in their own right, but even more so given the challenging market conditions we've overcome. Our ability to continue to deliver earnings growth is testament to our focus on the fundamentals. This includes solid execution of value accretive acquisitions, a sharp focus on efficiency, and disciplined management of working capital and cash. Our results include 4 months trading from our most recent acquisition, Jelco, which joined the group in September. Jelco's contribution to the result has been pleasing, with operating performance in line with expectations, and the integration is progressing well. We've made significant progress in the implementation of our efficiency program announced last year, and we've started to realise benefits. During the period, we closed one site, and we have restructure activities well underway at a number of others. We have continued to demonstrate disciplined management of our balance sheet and cash generation. We have delivered a $52 million reduction in debt, an improvement in gearing, an improvement in operating cash flow, and our cash conversion percent also improved. Operationally, it was pleasing to see the commissioning of our new plant in Indonesia, representing a major milestone in deepening the relationship with one of our largest customers in the region. Our focus on the fundamentals has positioned us well to overcome the impact of subdued demand in the period. Our volumes have also been adversely impacted by net contract losses, largely associated with contract losses in prior periods, which have offset the benefits of what was otherwise a good period in terms of customer success and contract wins. So whilst it was a pretty challenging period, our resilience has again delivered growth, which is very pleasing. So on that note, I'm really pleased to report that this performance has enabled us to deliver increased returns to our shareholders, with the board determining a dividend of 10 cents per share, franked to 65%, up from an unfranked dividend of 9.5 cents for the same period last year. This is a very good result. We've also improved results in the priority area of safety. As you can see on slide 5, our LTIFR for the period was 3.7, an improvement from 4.8 in 2015. I'm passionate about safety, and as an incoming CEO, this improvement gives me a level of confidence in the health of the business. I view safety as a bellwether for underlying operations, and an improvement like we have seen in the period is a very positive sign. It's also relevant to note that the safety performance of our base business was better than the headline rate suggests, with improvements there offset by some disappointing safety performances in our newly acquired businesses as we induct them to the Pact safety culture. Whilst trending positively, there is more we must do. This remains a key area for improvement and one that we'll continue to actively drive across the organisation. The health and safety of our employees remains our key priority. With those opening remarks, I'll now hand over to Richard to go through the financials in more detail. Richard.
Thanks, Mal, and good morning, everyone. Referring now to the financial results summary on slide 7. As Mal mentioned, it is pleasing to report at a headline level growth in all key financial metrics in the period. Sales were up 8% on 2015, with growth driven through acquisitions, delivering $81 million in additional sales in the period. This included the benefit of Jalco, which was acquired on 1 September 2015. Incremental sales from a number of small bolt-on acquisitions made in the second half of last year, and an additional 5 weeks trading from Sula. Lower volume in the underlying business partially offset this, impacted by weaker demand in our agriculture, dairy and mining sectors, and net contract losses in the period. The underlying demand across most segments was subdued. Resin prices were flat in the period, with the drop in the USD per tonne price offset by the weaker Australian dollar. EBIT was up 4% on 2015, with acquisition benefits, efficiency and good margin management only partially offset by lower volumes. I will talk through this in more detail on the following slide. NPAT before significant items was up 10% due to the improved operating performance, lower net finance costs and a slightly lower average tax rate. Operating cash continues to be a highlight, and we see further improvements here with operating cash up 7% on the prior period. The balance sheet remains strong, with gearing at 2.7 times, also improved on the prior year with net debt down 8%. Now looking at group EBIT in a little more detail. As you can see on the waterfall, incremental contributions from acquisitions have had a positive impact to our earnings. The incremental contribution from Jalco, a full year of Sulo and the smaller bolt-ons was a pleasing $3.6 million for the period. Jalco has been performing well and in line with expectations in its first 4 months of ownership, and the integration has also been progressing to plan. Importantly, the business went live on SAP on 1 December, representing a significant milestone in enabling the finalisation of the integration and the synergies to be delivered. It is important to note that the $3.6 million contribution that you see here is a net of integration costs. As a result, margins are well below PAC's average margins. We will expect to see margins improve as we move through integration over the next 6 months and continue to deliver operational synergies. Our efficiency program has delivered us cost improvements of $2.8 million in the period. During the period, we closed one plant and progressed rationalisation work at 7 others. We will see further improvements come through in the second half, but as we indicated previously, the bulk of efficiency benefits will be delivered in the 2017 financial year. The challenge for us during the period has been volume. We've had little benefit from growth in underlying demand, with market conditions subdued, and at the same time, we have experienced volume falls in some sectors. There has been weakness in global dairy markets, and as a result, we have seen lower demand from our major dairy customers in the period, which has particularly impacted sales in our international segment. We've also seen a drop in demand for oils and lubricants into mining markets in Australia, as well as a drop in demand for these same products in our China business, impacted by the weaker economic conditions there. Partially offsetting this was a stronger demand in our material handling sector, both in Australia and in our international segment. Whilst we have had very good success at winning new business recently and have achieved close to 100% success rate on recent contract renewals, net contract losses, largely from prior periods, which began transitioning out of our supply network during the period, have also reduced volumes. Overall movements in underlying volume resulted in a $3.4 million EBIT reduction. What is pleasing in this result is that the acquisitions aside, we have maintained our underlying earnings versus last year despite our volume challenges, clearly illustrating the resilience of the business. Referring now to slide 9, our Australian segment was well supported by acquisition benefits, with all our recent acquisitions being Australian-based. Sales were up 13% and EBIT was up 11%. Acquisitions aside, sales were down, driven by lower volumes. Despite the lower sales performance, EBIT before acquisitions was up 3.7%, with efficiency benefits, a small profit on the sale of property, and lower depreciation more than offsetting the impact of lower volumes. EBIT margins were slightly down, impacted by acquisitions. Excluding acquisitions, EBIT margins improved to 9.7%, a pleasing result reflecting good margin management and a focused approach to cost control. Referring now to slide 10, sales and EBIT in our international segment were down, largely due to lower volumes. Pleasingly, our Indonesian plant was completed and initial sales volumes have been in line with expectations. Margins are down slightly on the prior year, negatively impacted by plant startup costs in Indonesia and unfavourable mix. However, costs remain well controlled. A quick update on the efficiency program we announced in the 2015 financial year. This program delivered us $2.8 million of benefits in the period. We have closed one plant in New Zealand and have begun rationalisation work at seven sites. We have also progressed various other projects targeting plant efficiency and automation. Over 100 employees have exited the organisation as part of the efficiency program. In the period, we recognised a further $4 million in costs for this program, which have been included as part of our significant items. In total, we have now recognised $25 million in costs, of which $11 million are cash costs. Expected total program costs remain in the order of $30 million, of which approximately half are expected to be cash costs. We expect to see further benefits in the second half, with full-year benefits for 2016 in the order of $6 million. We remain on track to deliver a further $8 to $9 million next year to achieve annual savings of $15 million by the end of financial year 17. Referring now to the cash flow on slide 12. We continue to demonstrate disciplined management of our cash. We reported another strong operating cash flow performance for the period, with operating cash flow at $56.7 million, excluding securitisation, delivering a cash conversion of 52%, up on 51% in the prior year, representing four consecutive years of improvement in the half one operating cash number. Our cash flow is seasonal and is biased to the second half, and we would expect to see cash conversion improve significantly in the second half, consistent with prior periods. Capital expenditure was up slightly versus the prior year, due in part to the spending in the acquired businesses and the investment in the new plant in Indonesia. The balance sheet remains strong. Net debt at the end of the period was $569 million, $52 million lower than the prior period. Spend on acquisitions of $91 million over the last 12 months have been more than offset by good operating cash flows and the benefit of the debtor securitisation program, which has reduced net debt by $103 million versus the prior period. Our gearing at the end of the period was 2.7 times, improved on 3.1 times in the prior corresponding period, and well within our targeted range. Average tenure of our facilities is 3.5 years, and at the end of the period, we have unutilised facilities available of $154 million. Our interest cover remains healthy at 6.7 times, again, well within our targeted range. Our funding costs have reduced versus the prior year, assisted by favourable outcomes following the refinancing in June 2015 and the net benefits of the debtors securitisation program. This concludes my comments on the financials. I will now hand back to Mal.
Thanks, Richard. As of today, I've been with PACT a little over 80 days. I've spent this time visiting and understanding the business through the lens of our processes, our people, and importantly, our customers. I've visited over 45 operational sites, have had significant engagement with our customers, and detailed operational and functional reviews are underway. I've been delighted by what I've seen. PACT is a very solid company built on very solid foundations. Turning to slide 16, PACT has an enviable track record of success. This doesn't come by chance. Our success is underpinned by capability. Across PACT, there is a disciplined performance-driven culture supported by extensive industry and manufacturing experience. This has underpinned an extensive manufacturing and supply network that enables us to meet the needs of our customers with quality product and timely service. We also have an outstanding track record of successfully growing through merger and acquisition, and we have expertly managed and improved our underlying business over many years. Through our capability, we have matured and grown a business which today enjoys sector-leading positions, giving us a diversity across our product and service portfolio unmatched by others, the ability to offer our customers world-class innovation and some of the best products available globally through both our in-house innovation capability and our extensive licensing arrangements, and this diversity delivers resilience of performance for all of our key stakeholders' benefit. Our strategic portfolio management over recent years has further strengthened PAC's resilience. We have improved our sector diversity with increased exposure to higher growth sectors of health and personal care and other non-food consumables, and reduced our reliance on the food, dairy and beverage sector by approximately 10% since 2013. All in all, this gives PACT a strong foundation. Given this base, I believe there is opportunity to build and grow. Firstly, there are opportunities to drive efficiency further. Whilst PACT has been renowned for its relentless pursuit of efficiency, I believe we can deliver sustainable value through a more structured approach to efficiency. This includes leveraging lean manufacturing to drive cost structures to the lowest point on the cost curve and exploring further opportunities in the areas of plant optimization, automation, and a more efficient manufacturing footprint. Over the next 6 months, we'll do work to quantify the opportunities and the potential cost to deliver. Secondly, there are opportunities to deliver growth in our core sectors. There is a robust sales pipeline leveraging our broader sector presence, which we will drive through a more focused sales function and pipeline management process. We can also leverage our innovation capability in a more focused fashion to enhance this further. We also have exciting growth opportunities with our customers regionally, as demonstrated through the recent commissioning of our Indonesian plant with a major multinational customer. Thirdly, M&A remains a key pillar for growth. In speaking with a number of our shareholders and others in the market over the last few months, I've been asked numerous times, is there more you can do? The answer is yes. Whilst we have made 44 acquisitions since 2002 across our diverse sectors, there are plenty of opportunities remaining which offer attractive returns. Our M&A pipeline is strong. We will continue to look for opportunities that meet our assessment and return criteria and that offer opportunity for us to further diversify. Our most recent acquisition, Gelco, is a good example of how we have been able to leverage our core competencies, acquire new complementary competencies, and deliver value. Finally, we have opportunity around process and structure. As a company grows, it is important that structures and process keep up with it. Structures must support strategy. The company must be structurally capable to capture and digest growth, both organic and M&A, to deliver maximum returns across the entire business portfolio. We are making changes as we speak to ensure we maximise this. So, to summarise now on slide 18, we have delivered earnings growth for the period against a backdrop of challenging market conditions, illustrating our resilience and the benefit of diversification. Our efficiency program is well advanced and delivering benefits. Our recent acquisitions are performing well, with integration on track. Our balance sheet remains strong. We have improved our cash flow, reduced our net debt, and reduced our gearing. We have delivered increased returns to our shareholders, and importantly, we're strategically well positioned with opportunities for growth. PACT is a strong company that has consistently delivered strong growth with plenty of opportunity ahead. Turning to our FY16 outlook on slide 19. Our outlook has not changed. We expect to achieve higher revenue and underlying earnings in FY16, subject to global economic conditions. That concludes our presentation, and we will now take questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset to ask your question.
Here we go.
Your first question comes from Simon Fitzgerald, Evans & Partners.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my questions.
That was very helpful with showing the EBIT breakdown between acquisitions and, you know, the underlying business. Just wondering if you might sort of mention to us what the underlying revenue growth would have been on a like-for-like basis, you know, discounting those acquisitions.
I think, Simon, we actually put some information in there and did talk about the fact that we, in terms of the underlying business, we have seen a slight decrease there, primarily driven by, as we said, some of the market factors that we have seen. I think the important thing is that, you know, we have been able to drive growth across the entire business portfolio, including those acquisitions. So, but in terms of the specifics of your question, you know, we are seeing a small decrease as a result of the position in terms of the underlying market.
Sure. And in terms of resin prices, if there was any sort of flow through that might have impacted your sort of underlying sales in terms of the pass through, is there anything you can sort of mention to us in regards to that?
Yeah, I think in terms of resin pricing, as we've always said, the key for us in terms of how we manage resin is to ensure that we have a contracting strategy that allows us to pass through both the effects in terms of the actual resin price and any movements associated with the Australian dollar to the US dollar. Interestingly enough, although we did see volatility across the period, the actual impact in terms of average resin price across the half was pretty close in terms of year on year. So in terms of the impact from a sales perspective, it was not significant. And then, as I've always said, in terms of actual falling to the profit P&L, you know, there was we didn't see any benefits associated with the movement because of the way we manage our contract profile.
Okay, and just one final question on Gelco from me. You know, sort of on an annualised basis, looking at doing $200 million in revenue. Firstly, is that a bit stronger than what your original base case was? And also, I just wanted to know, was there any acquisition provisions that might have been put through with that I didn't notice?
Look, I think in terms of Gelco, you've got to remember that we will only see 10 months worth of performance in this financial year. Certainly, as we talked at the full year, we are expecting to see that is an area of the market in terms of the contract filling where there will be some opportunities for growth. We also talked in the presentation, though, that during this six-month period, we have been affected by the fact that we are in the middle of the integration process. We hit the key milestone, as I talked about in the presentation, around the fact that we've now gone live on SAP, which does represent a significant, as I said, a significant milestone for us in terms of driving integration activities. So I think in the second 6 months, you know, whilst we'll still have some costs associated with integration, we will also have, you know, some of the benefits starting flow through both of synergies, but certainly the business is performing in line with our expectations.
Excellent. Thank you. I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Simon.
The next question is from Mark Wilson at Deutsche Bank.
Thanks very much. Mel, I was just wondering if you could elaborate on some of the contract losses that you referred to and just how, you know, just trying to get a feel for how significant they were. I, you know, take it for granted that, you know, that was before your time, but, you know, and maybe if you could put forward some reasons as to why you actually lost those contracts.
Sure, Mark. Look, you know, we continually bid for business in any businesses I've been in. PAC's no different. We're in a competitive environment, and occasionally this is going to result in a net loss or gain in any given year or 12-month period. You know, what I'm pleased about, though, is the disciplined approach that I've seen that PAC have to contracts and the negotiations. And, you know, I would say that we've got a strong pipeline, and we also have over 6,000 customers, which gives us great diversity. So, you know, we have some ups and downs in any given year, and in this particular year, it appears that we've had a net decrease. But like I said, I'm pretty comfortable with our pipeline and where we're heading forward.
And just in relation to the $3 million earnings impact from lower volumes, how much of that was due to contract losses?
Sorry, Mark, I think I cut you off there. It's about $1.5 to $2 million.
Okay, great.
Of the 3.4 to quantify it.
And were they in any particular sector or other, you know, businesses that are under more threat than others?
Look, you know, we won't go into any detail with regards to customers and segments in that area, but certainly, you know, quantifying it for you, and I think we've given some good detail, you know, as to the bridge and Richard's commentary, but I think that's kind of what we're prepared to say on that. But as I said, we've had some ups and downs in different sectors, demand-driven and some contractual.
That's great. Thanks very much.
The next question is from Larry Gandler, Credit Suisse.
Hi, guys. Just a few questions from me. I guess to start with Power Plastics, I saw the ACCC gave you approval for that transaction. Can you give us a bit of background as to that company and transaction?
Okay. Hi, Larry. So, yeah, it's another bolt-on acquisition. Fits very well within our strategy. It's a very well-run company with a terrific customer base, complementary to ours, and gives us a little bit more diversity. So, you know, I think we're very happy with that acquisition, and you know, we're looking forward to getting it on board and integrating it.
Yeah, the one thing I'd say, Larry, is that, you know, it is a business that lines up very well with our traditional markets and will fit well within our integration model. So. But as Mal said, it is a bolt-on acquisition.
Sure. And would you, just in order of magnitude, is it something like $20 million in sales, or is it much smaller than that?
Look, I don't think we will go into details in relation to that unless it's appropriate at the time. But at this stage, it would be in the range of the bolt-on acquisitions, Larry.
Okay. And I think, Richard, we discussed this before, although I don't recall the answer. So with the dairy sector, as opposed to ag, PAC's called out some weakness there. I'm just wondering how that flows through to your revenue and your profit. Is it volume loss because of, I don't know, agricultural chemicals in the pasture segment, or is it price erosion because of pressure from customers in that space?
Look, I think, as you know, and you will have seen, because I know you cover a couple of the companies in that sector, you know, that is a sector that obviously is experiencing some pressure in terms of volume. We provide a range of different products into that segment, but certainly the key issue for us is that we are seeing volume on the back of some of the issues that are being faced by the companies in those segments at the moment.
Yeah, I'm just distinguishing dairy from ag, though. Is there any distinguishment, really?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, if you look at the agricultural markets, Larry, our broader offerings cover things like sprays and pesticides and things that farmers and agriculturalists will use in day-to-day operations as opposed to the end product of the actual dairy itself. If I was to give you a feel, it's probably 60-40 split between dairy and ag in terms of the impact.
Okay. All right, that's understood, sort of. We'll discuss maybe some of that offline. And my last question is around actually resin and perhaps maybe another one on volume. But with resin in the second half, it looks like coming into 2H16, it looks like AUD resin costs will be down much more significantly than they were in 1H in terms of movement. Should we be thinking that PACT will, you know, manage some savings as the best they can in 2H?
Look, I think it's you know, go back to what I said to Simon earlier, Larry. I mean, our goal has always been to maintain a contract profile that means that, you know, we are passing on movements in that raw material through to our customers. You know, one thing that I will say is that, interestingly enough, if you look at the resin graph this year versus last year, we're seeing that same downward profile in terms of a year on year. So, I think we're not seeing anything substantially different in terms of how that profile will work its way through into our results in the second half.
Okay, that's understood. All right, I'll leave it there. I'll come back if I have other ones. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Larry.
The next question is from Scott Hudson at CLSA.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Firstly, on your comments around further plant optimization, I was just wondering, is that over and above the, I guess, 15 million target that's that you're already working towards?
Scott, yeah, it's Mal. I would say yes. What we're doing at the moment is, as I've gone around and looked, you know, we have a really solid base in terms of the way we've run our plants, and PACT has had a very strong focus on efficiencies. What I'm seeing, having, you know, worked and run sort of over 150 other factories around the world, is that we have opportunities around lean, around plant optimization, automation, and, you know, potentially a more efficient footprint. So I'll probably spend the next 3 to 6 months just getting a handle on that and trying to size up, you know, over the next 6 months what that might look like and what the costs might be. But it would be incremental to the efficiency program that Richard referred to earlier.
Right. Then secondly, is there any further impact in the second half from those contractual losses that you've highlighted?
Look, I think, you know, as we talked, obviously we're constantly in the process of winning and losing business, Scott, but certainly, you know, we would expect to see that there will be an adverse impact in the second 6 months in relation to those contracts. So I don't think that the profile will be substantially different to what we saw in the first half, but certainly we will see an adverse impact from that following
through. Okay, thanks. And then lastly, just in terms of the Indonesia ramp-up, I know you highlighted some, I guess, costs associated with that. How long does that ramp-up process, be a drag on earnings?
Yeah, I think...
Go on, Rich.
Look, I think in terms of the Indonesian project, I think it's important to realise that, you know, it is a ramp-up. We only finalised commissioning of that facility in December, or actually went into full-scale production in December. So, you know, we are starting to... It is performing in line with our expectations, albeit slightly behind in terms of its commissioning date. But I think we would see in the second 6 months that, you know, factors such as, you know, how quickly, you know, our customers can get into that market, you know, will be a very significant impact in terms of the performance of that. But what I will say is that certainly our expectations is that in the medium term that plant will perform in line with expectations.
So, am I reading you right? We should see a more positive impact in the second half versus the first half, given that it only kind of hit.
Yeah, I think that's
beneficial production in December.
Yeah, I guess I'm only tempering my comments by, you know, there are the market and it is a new entry position for customers, but yeah, I think that's a fair.
Yeah, I think, Scott, I'd characterise it that the plant is commissioned, so it's up and running, and now we're seeing volume starting to be sold at the consumer end, and so some of the volume will be dependent on the customer uptake of our customers' products.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks, mate.
The next question is from Ramon Lazar at UBS.
Good morning, guys. Just a couple from me. Just in regard to what you're seeing from those industrial and ag sectors in the first couple of months of the second half, if we could start with that.
I think a bit similar to the comments that I made to Scott before, Ramon, is that we're certainly expecting that some of the factors, certainly the factors that have driven our first half result, will be there in the second half. It's early to call in terms of what the extent of those will be, but certainly the fundamentals attached to things like the dairy market are not going to change in the second half of this financial year. So, I think it would be fair to say that, you know, the basis upon which our financial result has been formed will flow into the second half.
Okay, and then you get another, I guess, full half of contribution, if we think about it, from the acquisitions, from Jalco and a couple of the other smaller ones. Is that the right way to think about the growth profile?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the smaller acquisitions are now fully baked in terms of a half performance, albeit that, you know, we continue to look and work through the synergy opportunities. But certainly Jalco, there will be an uptick in the second half because we only had the business for 4 months. We will still have integration activities to be funded in the second 6 months, but I think your statement is correct, yes.
Okay, and so I guess that leads to the next one. Do you expect to see a positive contribution then, net of integration, from Jalco? Because there was I think $3 million or $2.5 million at the EBIT line from Jalco in the first half. Is it a likely similar sort of amount in the second half expected, given that integration's continuing?
I think that's a fair assumption. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're
6 months versus four, Ramon. So, you know, as Richard said, we've still got some integration activities happening there. We had the SAP implementation was completed sort of through towards the end of December, but we have other integration activities happening still, and that'll continue to incur some cost as we go forward. But certainly 6 months versus 4 months, second half to first half, you'll see an incremental uplift on that for sure.
Okay, and then just on the cost out program, is the goal to get a net sort of $15 million run rate by FY17, net of inflation pressures? Is that the way to think about the benefit?
Yeah, the goal is been to deliver $15 million from the program by 2017. Yes. So, I mean, in the results today, we've announced that there's efficiency coming through in the first half. We expect that a full year efficiency to be about $6 million for this financial year, with the rest of it to be recognised in the 2017 financial year.
Okay, and that's at a net level.
Yeah.
And then just one more on the securitisation program. So, I think that there was an additional $6 million securitized in the last half, which takes the total to just above the $100 million facility limit that you sort of talked about last August. Have you increased?
No. The facility limit is actually $150 million.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah. So more in the case of roundings. Previously, we talked about the fact that it was about $100 million that we had drawn down against that facility. But the $6 million simply represents at this point in time the seasonal nature of our business and the ability to draw down more against that at this stage.
Yeah. Okay. And just to think about the costs of that securitization program. So I think you've mentioned the financing cost is roughly the same as your interest cost, but I mean, just in terms of what you de-recognized in terms of receivables last year was $128 million, but you received cash of $97 million. Is that the right way to think about the discount?
No. Yeah, look, I think we'll take that one offline because I think it's a much more detailed question. But that's not the correct way. There is you'll see in the profit and loss there is a cost associated with derecognizing of the securities, which represents the cost associated with the program.
Right. Okay. Great. Well, I'll take that offline with you then.
Yep.
Thanks very much.
All right. Cheers, Ramon.
The next question is from Anton Alizero at Investors Mutual.
Yeah, hi, Mel. How are you? And thanks for the result. I thought it was pretty solid. Mel, obviously your chairman has talked about his 5 Cube aspirations, I guess, in the past. And to me, it reminded me a little bit of Amcor in terms of having that steady-based business and potentially, you know, you'll come across something, you know, at the right time. Do you see what that might be, Mal, at some point in the next sort of 3 to 5 years? Do you have a feel for where that, I guess, step change for the company may come from to make your chairman's aspirations more achievable, perhaps, in that sort of time frame? And, look, I know it's a difficult question, but just interested in your thoughts.
Yeah, it is, Anton. I think, you know, my view on this, and having spoken with our board and our chairman, you know, we have a lot of M&A opportunity here domestically and in the international regions that we operate in. And I think that, you know, it will serve us well to continue to execute well against that M&A strategy. And I think opportunistically, as we look at assets around the world, if that's appropriate and if they're priced right and they fit with our strategy, it's something we'd look at and something we'd attack. We don't have anything in the pipeline, I would say, right now that would be imminent, but it's something that forms part of our M&A approach, and we look as broadly as we do sort of as intensely in our domestic markets. So I know that's a general answer, but I think that's probably the best answer, is that it's something that we look at. It's something that we would apply our disciplined M&A approach to. I wouldn't say it's driving us and keeping us awake every night if we don't get it done immediately.
Okay, thanks.
This concludes our question and answer session. I'll now hand back to Mr. Bundy for closing remarks.
Thank you, everyone, and thanks for attending the call. And we appreciate it, and we'll see you at the next call. Thank you.